talking now is in regards to the Newton Steel strike that happened a number of years ago. And most of the employees were from Newton Falls, Ohio. So they were all steel workers. But the strike itself and the picket line was made up of a lot of downriver union men that were acquainted with picket lines and strikes, and that's what made it a little disagreeable here in Monroe. And this is before I-75 went through, so Elm Avenue and Detroit Avenue come together and formed a corner. And this is where they formed their picket line, right there. And at the time, why, a number of automobiles were tipped over, and oh, there was a few scrambles and fights and what have you. But at the time, why, Mayor Nags was the mayor of the city of Monroe, and he was going to break up this picket line. So to do it, he was going to have Casey Jones, that was the organizer of Jones Transfer here in Monroe, one of his big trucks, and he had movie cameras on the back, and he was coming down Elm Avenue, and I knew him real well, and so I motioned to get on, so he said, "Hop on, Pat." So I hopped on. That's where I made my big mistake, because they had a lot of tear gas they were going to spread as soon as this truck got down there, and the movie cameras were all set while this was going to break up the picket line, which it did. And this, at that time, why, tear gas was kind of a new thing around here. They'd used it somewhat in World War I, but not to any big extent. But this tear gas, boy, I was right in the midst of it, and your eyes were like a fountain from tears. When they call it tear gas, boy, that's just what it was. And this really spread them out. I'm telling you, they took off and left. But here I was on the truck with these camera guys, and they were going to stay till everything was over. So I was right in the midst and couldn't get away from it. But there was quite a bit doing uptown at the time. There was different things happening on the streets, and it was sort of a mixed up affair. But after the picket line was broken and they come to terms, it was straightened out, and so that was the end of the Newton Steel strike. But it was quite a thing for the city of Monroe, because we had never witnessed anything like that. Our town is more or less a paper town, paper mills, and they weren't organized at that time, so they had no interference with the strike whatsoever. And our other plants didn't have it. This steel, of course, had always been organized, their union, like the railroads, they go way back. But this was finally settled. And,
were you around at all when the black guy, the union leader, got taken out of town?
Oh yeah, this colored guy. Uh-huh. They run him out of town, yeah.
Took him right on the rails?
And he took a little beating on the way, too. Uh-huh. And Monroe Piers, the Piers was just beyond where the Newton Steel, now Ford Motor Company, has the plant. And Monroe Piers was down on the lake shore. And the River Raisin flowed all the way down through there and formed a canal right at the Monroe Piers. And that was dredged out quite deep. In fact, Monroe Piers was quite a concession there during the summer months. And the big boats from around, yachts come in there. In fact, G.H. Wood, that was president of the River Raisin Paper Company, he had a big yacht. And he had all Swedish sailors on it. Boy, they were big monsters.
These guys have all full dress uniforms and everything.
Yeah, he had everything on it, uh-huh. But this eventually burned, and it was quite a question what set this thing on fire.
Oh, they say it was arson?
But yeah, that to this day, I think it was, but it was never proven that way, so he collected his insurance.
Oh, okay.
But the Monroe Piers there had the yacht club, too, which was down right on the waterway. And on the canal, they had a lot of sailboats and the old dances down there and different things. And then they also had concession stands and ball games, and they had a big hotel down there. They call it the Lotus Hotel. And the reason they got the name Lotus, these Lotus beds that they had, the water lilies, they call them Lotus beds at that time. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget, Mel Carl and I were real good friends, went to school together. And his grand folks run the boat concession there. And they had rowboats and motor, they had everything in the line of boats for rental. And we used to take canoe and go back in the marsh and get these water lilies and bring them back and put them in tubs, and people would buy them. We really cleaned up a couple of years there on the water lily. But gee, there were snakes in the marsh too, you had to be careful. And now and then there'd be a water moccasin. But the Piers was quite a concession ordeal, and at that time they had the Piers car that run. Their turntable was out on Monroe Street where the shopping center that just burned. Mm-hmm. Across the street from that, and that's where the turntable was. Then the car barns was on the corner of Elm and Monroe Street.
Okay.
It was a big concession. The cars would go in there for repair and everything. And the streetcars at that time run from Toledo to Detroit, so they were a passenger ordeal. And the lake itself and the shore was real nice. It was all sandy. It was just like any other beach. And it was real nice.
Did you come across Sterling at all back then when you were a kid growing up?
Pardon me?
Sterling?
Sterling Park, yeah. Sterling was just this side of that.
Uh-huh.
But it got its name from... See, Sterling run the ice and coal ordeal.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to get his ice from the lake down in that area.
Did he use the ice for refrigeration?
Yeah, that's right. That's all they had at that time was refrigeration. He didn't have a refrigerator. It was all an ice ordeal. But also, I noticed we have a semi-pro ball. I played a lot of baseball, played all through high school, and then when I graduated from high school, I played on the independent team.
Okay.
I played with the Monroe Stars and the independent team. I played with U.S. Tires and the Monroe Merchants. The Monroe Merchants was, I think, the best ball club we had. That was semi-pro. And Bono Branshaw pitched for us. Bono Branshaw was property of the Detroit Tigers.
Uh-huh.
And he was down in Waco, Texas, when all of the Stars had come up here for the Tigers. He played with them down in Beaumont, Texas, rather. And Bono, one time he missed the bus and he was going back, hopped a freight, and he jumped, thought it was a sand car on his pig iron, and he chipped a bone in his elbow. And he couldn't throw a curveball very good after that.
Uh-huh.
So he lost his major league ordeal. He would have gone up a big show.
Uh-huh.
Bud Parmalee, of course, made the big show, but Bud had fastball. In fact, he was so wild, he was effective at the plate.
Uh-huh.
Nobody wanted to stand up and take a goal. He still holds a record for the Giants for walking people. But Bono was just as fast as Bud Parmalee.
Uh-huh.
Bud Parmalee was fast. But
what was
I played on these teams, and we had the privilege of playing the St. Louis Cardinals and several black teams before they got into the major leagues. They had the Black League at that time, and they were pretty good.
You also came across Charlie Gehringer, too, huh?
Yeah, Charlie Gehringer. We, a manager of our merchant team was Ward Andrews. He was a county agriculture agent here, but he and Gehringer played together over in Fowlerville.
Mm-hmm.
And Sandlot Ball, and he was there when Bobby Veach come and got Charlie Gehringer to go to the big show. So every year at the end of the season, we'd have a Gehringer Day, and Charlie Gehringer would come down and play with us, and that would really draw a crowd. And I'll never forget the one game. Consolidated Paper had a baseball team, and we elected to let them play the merchant team on Gehringer Day.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a pitcher by the name of Bummer Jarvis was pitching for him. And the first time that Gehringer was up to bat, Bummer threw one in there and Gehringer hit one back through the box. It had taken a leg off, went all the way under the fence, out in right field. The next time Gehringer come up, Bummer stood out there and he wound up and he wound up. He was afraid to throw the ball. Then we had another Rogel All-Stars. They were, after the season was over, storm and play different places in Michigan, and they come out. At that time, they had a fellow by the name of Burns playing first base. He wasn't with them very long. And Joe Arnosky pitched against them, and he pitched for the Newton Steel team that was down here. So Joe wanted to pitch against the Rogel All-Stars for a couple of innings. And this Jack Burns, the first time he's up the bat, Joe was wild. He had a fast one too, but he backed Burns off the plate about 3-4 times. The next time Burns come up, he took the bat and put it out on the plate and stood back and let it Joe Arnosky throw it. But we had a good semi-pro team there. I think at one time I had a chance to go down to Texas, but geez, at that time I didn't pay any money. You almost had to pay your way, you know. And the living was tough. And of course, that's where we really organized and started paying pretty good money.
What position did you play?
Pardon me?
What position did you play?
I played short, and I did a little pitching, too.
Okay.
Of course, my wife Mary at one time was kind of Miss Monroe, and I guess that kind of leaned me towards her. So I think through that, why she got me.
What year was that anyway when she was Miss Monroe?
1925. My employment, I played softball and hardball with the different plants here in town. They always give me a job in the summertime for school vacation. But my biggest employment was Consolidated Paper. I went to work there, and I'd worked all through the plants to get the formality of it, and then they put me in the estimating and then in charge of the cost department, and then on the road sales, and that was the best endeavor I had. I think of all the jobs, the sales department's the best. If you got a good product, you got good service, why, You can sell the product, and which they had at that time. They were one of the biggest in the country at that time, but...
But that was Monroe's only paper plant back then?
No, we had the River Raisin Paper Company and the paper products, and then the old Mitchell. It was just a board mill right along the river by Wrestler Street up there. But this was quite a paper town. Our employment, so maybe, sure, it was in the paper industry. And... I, too, had the privilege of being on the council for 12 years here in the city of Monroe and being mayor six, so I had a total of 18 years as far as the political status was concerned. And while I was in that position, I received several awards. In fact, in 1978, I received the Monroe High School Alumnus Award. And then in 1981, the County Bar Association that takes in all the attorneys, they award the Liberty Bell to somebody that has been quite outstanding as far as civic activity, and that was awarded to me in 1981. Then in 1985, they started this receiving a Hall of Recognition in the city of Monroe, and they have the plaques set up on a wall down in the city of Monroe. This happened in 1985, and the Recreation Commission set that. In fact, I was on the Recreation Commission for 12 years.
And we all know that Munson Park is named for you too, out on Custer Road.
That's right. Well, years ago, for the youngsters and myself in my early age, dancing was quite an activity then, and they had community service at that time, which was recreation here in Monroe. To the recreation department, it was community service, and it was more or less set up like our recreation department now. But there was a lot of dance halls at that time, and they used the Masonic Temple, and also Munch's Hall used to be up above where Sears and Roebuck's were on Monroe Street. And that was quite a place. And then around through the county, Dundee, Schofield, Ida, all of them, they all had dance halls. And they would have dance on weekends and holidays. So the youngsters had something to do then. And they started at one time having dances over in the park on the corner of Monroe in front. But we had quite a bit of trouble. There were fights and different things, so they had to cut it out for a while.
What were the fights caused from? Just a group of people hanging out together? Just, just groups started fighting?
But you know, the sad part of it is it was just a small group that would cause the trouble.
Which group was that? Which group would be that was causing the trouble?
You always had a few ruffians, and more on the male side, that would come there and start trouble with the guys that didn't care about trouble or anything, push them around, what have you. And to police it, it'd take quite a bit, so they finally closed it up.
Speaking of those dances, I remember that one time you were telling the story about out in Mabee, when you were at the dance hall, when your buddy passed out there from, you got south a little bit there.
Yeah, this was years ago. This was Oakville, which was up west of Mabee, this side of Ypsilanti, and that was quite a place on weekend for dances, and there was an old big barn that they changed into a dance hall, and they had the heating system. They had a big furnace in the corner with a rail around it, and Art Jens and Don Finn and I used to go up there on Sundays to the dance, and down the road from this, it was during Prohibition, there was a guy that sold cider in the basement, hard cider, and you go down there and you lay on a carpet and your head on a pillow and suck on a hose for a quarter, and when you come up for air, let loose the hose, why, that was your quarter's worth. Well, this Don Finney used to spend a lot of money on cider. And this particular Sunday, why, we were in the dance hall after the cider session, and I was out on the dance floor dancing, and Art Jens come up and tapped me on the shoulder, and I thought he wanted to dance with the girl I was dancing with, but he said, come on, we got to carry Finn out. He's laid out over in the corner. His heat had got to the hard cider. So we took him out, and we put him in the back end of his roadster, and closed it up, and so we drove home, and Art Jens worked the old binder board, which was only about a block and a half from his house, so he didn't drive to work. So this incident happened on Sunday night. So Monday night, Art Jens called me and asked me to go uptown the pool, and so I said, I'll walk over. So we went out to the alley to get the car, and here was a guy kicking and hollering, here was Finn, we'd forgot all about him, and he was there over the weekend, and if he hadn't had his cider, then he'd have probably froze to
death. I like that story every time I hear it.
I also belonged to the National Guards in my younger age before I was married, and belonged to the Howitzer Company.
What did your Howitzer Company do? What was your...
Here in Monroe was a National Guard unit. We had the ambulance company, which had the ambulances, and then we had the Howitzer Company, which had the two guns. One was a Howitzer gun, and the other was a trench mortar. And the trench mortar they used, it was a tube, and you shoved the shell down in it, and that would set the cap off. And this was to break up machine gun nests. Mm-hmm. In other words, a loft in the air, and you set it for distance you wanted to explode. Then for the 37 millimeter gun, it was to break up fortresses. It was real explosive. Mm-hmm. And we were called the spare parts of the Army. In other words, when they went into this condition where they had a fortress or machine gun nest, why, they'd call a howitzer company up, and they called them the spare parts of the Army. Mm-hmm. And this one particular time, I'll never forget, during the middle of Sunday, why, we go up to Grayling in the summertime for 2 weeks. And the middle Sunday, the governor comes up, and they have a big reviewing stand out in the parade grounds, and each unit goes by the parade, by the stand, and it so happened, the howitzer gun being the spare parts of the unit, but was the last one to go by the parade stand. And at that particular time, I'd gone down the lake instead of using the latrine up by the company street, and I squatted in poison ivy. And Jesus, poison ivy started, and when you go before the parade, the governor, while you're in full dress, and geez, this is a hot summertime July. And
hey, what were your uniforms like that you had to wear?
Ones, they were wrap leggings, you know, and you had to wear a wool coat in addition to your shirt and the cap and what have you. So geez, it was real warm, and boy, this poison ivy sped like wildfire. Got warm from that sun, and they sent me over to the ambulance company, and boy, they had a gun over there that sprayed, and they sprayed some kind of a vial on me. It was blue. Boy, the skin just rolled off. Got rid of the poison ivy, but I didn't know if I'd ever wear skin again. All the plants here in Monroe used to be real active in the athletic activity. Uh-huh. They all sponsored teams and had uniforms, and made quite a good deal for the recreation department. In other words, the recreation ruling at that time was you had to live or work within the city of Monroe to participate in Monroe recreation. But later on, the school board expanded and took in the Custer area and part of Frenchtown, Raisinville. So the school board, of course, finished gymnasium and play fields and everything. Okay. So that was their part of the recreation. So the recreation department had to share the areas that the school board took in for the recreation program.
Okay.
So that really expanded it. Got to be quite a good size already.
So you just, you had to live in the city of Monroe to be able to play recreational sports then, huh?
I mean, you could live or work
in the city of Monroe.
Within the city of Monroe, okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. To participate, yeah.
Walter, why don't you tell me a little bit about your trip west when you went hitchhiking that one time?
When I graduated from high school, my cousin and I started. We hitchhiked all over the west, but we split up and Yellowstone Park. He didn't like to work too well, but I'd work a few days here and there, pick up a little purse, and then travel on. And in fact, I spent about 2 months and a half out there, 3 months in the West. I was all over. And the one place I probably enjoyed the most is probably the one big item in the West is Yellowstone National Park.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a short season in there, and it's usually college help. They reserve it from year to year. But I was lucky that a fellow from over here right on the Ohio line in Michigan was a manager at the Lake Hotel there.
Okay.
And I went in for an interview, and when I told him I was from Monroe, Michigan, we played baseball over there. And he remembered of merchants coming over there at every time, but he got to be manager. So Jeezy found a job for me. I worked nights. It was in the bakery department, washing pie tins, spiders, and what have you. But I roomed with a Filipino. They had dormitories there for the girls and the fellas. And, they had get-togethers, you know, at different times, dancing and what have you. But this Filipino had a little roadster, and geez, during the daytime, we worked nights, and during the daytime, we'd go all over the park. Of course, we had passes. And so I got to see Yellowstone Park, and it was like a book. Got to go there later, took my wife there. But that's quite a spot, Yellowstone Park.
And what about in Salt Lake City when you were there too for a while?
In Salt Lake City, that's a Mormon location, you know, and they have a tabernacle there and a temple. It's inside of a big wall, and during the day at different hours they have tours through there. And I got a job digging down to a swimming pool drain at that time, and they had a big leak in the pipe, and I don't know how many days I dug there, but anyway I got $18 for it, and at that time everything in the West, they call them cartwheels, silver dollars. So I got this $18. I had a hard time keeping my pants up, that $18. But the Mormon religion that originated, Brigham Young led them there, down the Ohio Way, and they got in the valley there, Salt Lake City, which is in a valley, and they started with their crops and got crops going, and I got some mined some coal, and about the times they just got underway, in come these Mormon crickets.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so desperate, they even ate ties, wood ties on the railroads.
Mm-hmm.
But they started devouring all their food, and the seagulls come in. The Mormons prayed and prayed, and they said the prayers were answered with these seagulls.
Mm-hmm.
And these seagulls come in, and they overcome the grasshoppers, so they got back into a living condition again. They have a big monument inside this wall. It's a seagull monument, and they still worship the seagull.
Mm-hmm.
But the Mormon are a good class of people. They help everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But to be a good Mormon, you had to be a good Mormon to get in the temple.
Mm-hmm.
You could get in the tabernacle. This tabernacle, around Christmas time, they show it occasionally in the choir there. And they have an organ that's supposed to have the sweetest tone of instrument, musical instrument in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And this in there are so good that you can drop a pin at one end, you can hear it at the other end. It's really something, it's really built good. But Salt Lake City, of course, it's a desert area in there. And Salt Lake isn't too far from there. It's outside of town, about 15 miles. And Salt Lake, at that time, I had the experience of swimming in there. You see pictures before of people laying on the water reading papers. But they have a life saver there, where they have the place to shower afterwards, and he tells everybody, don't submerge in it, because that salt gets in your nostrils.
Uh-huh.
There's only one type of fish lived in that, but this was salt, and when you come out of there, you got a crust of salt on you, you have a shower to wash it off, but you can really float.
Oh, you can't
surprising. Oh, yeah. You can really float in that. And that was quite, but that was gradually drying up. I don't know what the stage of it is now. And then they used on this salt flat there, this is where they used to have those tests for speed. Mm-hmm. And geez, you could do it for miles. All I had to do, just head one way and keep going.
Oh, was it that Bonneville flat?
Yeah. Okay. That was quite an experience, too. I had quite a time in the West.
You also an earthquake, too, weren't you?
The Butte, Montana. Mm-hmm. See, the part of the park, butts right against me, and within Butte. Boy, this earthquake, and you notice all the sheep just tearing out of there. Of course, Montana was always known for the sheep. But boy, there were cracks in the ground, and you could see down quite a ways. But this only, it's just a jar, just last temporarily. So I can see what they go through in California on that. Oh, man, that's really something,
Well, I'll tell you, to finish you up here, you got a little bit to go. How about, what's a few words about L. Cade Brumley?
Well, Al Cade Brumley was quite a musician, and he also taught piano lessons. Mm-hmm. Al Cade was colored, and his mother was white, but his dad was black. And their home was on Cass Street between 6th and 7th Street, which was a white area. Of course, he was the only black in Monroe at that time, but people respected him. He was a gentleman and kept his place as a black individual. Mm-hmm. And in fact, he played baseball at St. John's in the Church League, and was a good pitcher. Mm-hmm. He taught lessons, and also at that time, the family theater was quite a theater at that time. And they had an orchestra, an orchestra pit. Mm-hmm. And he headed this orchestra and played the piano in it. And they had a nine-piece. They'd have vaudeville shows and what have you. Mm-hmm. It was quite an ordeal in the family theater. But Al Cade was quite a guy. Everybody liked the guy, and treated him as an individual. And we didn't have this feeling then, blacks and whites. You didn't have anything of that nature.
He found he didn't have much of a problem with discrimination then, as he was.
No, at that time we didn't even know what it was.
Really?
No. We're very fortunate. Even now we have quite a few blacks here in Monroe, and steel casting and the Ford Motor, which they follow. That brought a lot of color in here. But they're pretty respectable people, and they go to school with the kids, and we don't have much trouble at all as far as discrimination is concerned. But you'll always find a few that feel they're discriminated on.
Okay. And then one more story here. I want to hear about your boxing career.
Years ago, I got into boxing. Joe Complo and Mickey Spain, they had been going over to Toledo a couple of years, and I used to work out with them, and they said, why don't you go to Toledo with us and get in a fight game? So I decided to go, and Ed Thatcher, the Eastside Athletic Club, he was a big manager. He had several good fighters come out of Toledo. He was known in the fight business all over, in fact. But anyway, we used to fight three rounds and get $5 for it. Mm-hmm. And when you went in, you weigh in. The next guy your weight, that's the guy you fight. Whether the match was even or not, it didn't make any difference. Weight's what conducted the thing. And the one incident that I had, one night, I had a colored guy that was always in my corner. He was a good manager. And this particular night, why, this guy was a lot older. I was only 17 then. Boy, he was up in years, and geez, he had cauliflower ears and nose bent off. He was really bruised up. You could see he'd been through the war. So I said to my manager in the second in the corner, I said, geez, do I have to fight that gorilla? He said, don't worry about him, he's a catcher. I said, catcher? This isn't baseball, this is boxing. And he said, no, he said, you'll be punching him all night, he probably won't hit you all night. And then the guy was right. So he said, I want to tell you something. He said, if you're fighting somebody, and this guy's had a lot of fights, he doesn't have any marks, boy, watch out for him. He's the guy that's going to get you. And I thought, geez, that's the best advice I ever heard. And really, I abided by that. But my fighting come to an end. My mother found out that I had forged my contract. Uh-huh. And I had scheduled to fight a six-rounder here in Monroe at the old armory. Uh-huh. Where they had fights, and she found out there that I was thinking, boy, that ended it right there. She got old Ed Thatcher, and boy, that was the end. But I was kind of glad afterwards. Boy, that's a tough racket, I'll tell you. Because I don't care how good you are, you're going to get hit plenty too.
Yep. Yeah. Alrighty, that'll do it for me. That's my half hour.